Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
You are hearing the autobiography of now see from where he's coming. He was born in his previous birth in a low family, apparently. I mean, you don't hear anything about his father. Today, that is quite normal. But in a real human civilization, this is uncommon and not the standard. Nevertheless, Mary was in those circumstances in his previous birth. And as you know so well, his mother would assist the traveling devotees of the Lord. And that way, Narayana got their association. Association is so important. Because as we hear in today's purport, you have the first initial stage in which there's some liking, no matter how slight, for Krishna and the process to attract Krishna. But in order to increase that liking, we hear today, one has to associate with pure devotees of the Lord. So a society of devotees is very essential for our spiritual progress, to get past that initial stage of a flickering liking for Krishna. This is why Srila Prabhupada labored so hard to establish this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And in fact, he said, I had to walk through fire to get this society going, undergoing so many tribulations and tolerating so much gross behavior. From his standard, it was barbaric behavior. Yet, to create a society of devotees that can enliven one another on the way back to Krishna. There are various levels and degrees of purity. Sometimes, in Prabhupada's writings, he refers to all his devotees as pure devotees, being very generous, and then sometimes he gives a much more stringent definition. Yet, if we are following the instructions properly of a dear devotee of the Lord, then we'll also become a dear devotee of the Lord. Our status is dependent on the mercy of the dear devotee of the Lord. Krishna saved Omar, Krishna beat Omar. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Krishna, I'm running after your devotee, shouting Krishna, Krishna. He's not running after Krishna directly. That's a very ineffective process. And you see in the life of Narada Muni, he got the mercy of the traveling Bhakti Vedantas. He even got the remnants of their food. So therefore, he developed spiritual aspirations. You could say he manifested spiritual aspirations. So, everything seemed fine for this boy, little boy, although he was part of an inauspicious situation, a mother who's, where's the man? But his mother was very affectionate. Now you think, well, he's got something going for him in terms of the material balance and the material stability. Then what happens? From the mundane point of view, it seems that destiny or Krishna kicks the chair out from under him. His mother goes out to milk a cow at night and is bitten by a snake and dies. That was his only source of affection. And yet, she's gone. How could this happen? We need education, spiritual education, to understand this situation. And the whole purpose of the Bhagavatam is to elevate you to gradual levels of perception and understanding. What looks one way to the materialist looks another way to the bhakti practitioner. So to the mundane eyes, materialistic vision, how could this be? This is so cruel. What kind of world is this? And such mundane consciousness will even challenge, how can there be a God when such events happen? This boy, little boy, all he had was his mother and her affection. Muni describes that this was a benediction. How could it be a benediction to lose your affectionate mother if you have no father? He saw it as a benediction because it would increase his dependency on Krishna. And that is what life is all about. Of course, we are already completely dependent, but we don't recognize that. That's our problem. As Shukadeva Goswami says in the second canto of Bhagavatam, Deha Patra Kalatra Yushatma Sanesha Sarasati Tesham Pramata Nidanam Pashyanda Pina Pashyati. You surround yourself with your army, your allies, and you think they're going to protect you, that in there, safe behind their phalanx, you will be able to proceed with material life and cross over any problems. But again, by definition, this is a fallible army that's doomed to fail. You're marching into war with an army that's doomed to not come back. But you think, I shall depend on my material resources. I shall depend on my bodily strength. I shall depend on my quick intelligence and my work experience. All those will get me through in life. You see that Krishna was not showing disfavor to this little Narada Muni. He was showing favor. How to bring Narada Muni closer to him. And the whole material cosmos is meant for that purpose. To allow us to reform and come closer to our original love for Krishna. But here's the problem. We have a disagreement with Krishna. We think the purpose of this cosmic manifestation is for our material fulfillment and enjoyment. And therefore we want the Supreme Lord to bless that situation. We decide the purpose, and then we ask Krishna, please, you facilitate, bless the situation, and everything will be fine. That is real religion. But the Bhagavatam is on a different standard. Right in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, Dharma Prochita Kaitavotra, it sweeps out all kinds of activity, even religious activity, that has any kind of material motivation for self-aggrandizement and pleasing oneself. Bhagavatam is not about that. So you should know what you're getting into from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. You are taking a journey to the heart of pure love. And if you don't understand that, you're going to become bewildered when you read about events such as Narada Muni losing his mother as a young 5-year-old boy. Why did this happen? Why couldn't he be a... Here's the question. Why couldn't he have had both the affectionate mother and the Lord's affection? So when we say that, what are we thinking? We know better. We know how to balance. Krishna should ask us how to balance the material and spiritual energies. Well, look at our track record. Look at our performance record. It's not very glamorous. Just by the fact that we have taken birth in this world means we have made a great mistake. Yet we want to tell Krishna how to deal with us. This is like going to a doctor and you finally recognize you're sick and then you tell the doctor, this is what I want, this is what I want. Of course, if you actually know more than the doctor, you can do that. If you know something, you might suggest, well, you know, I've heard about this herbal remedy, I've heard about this alternative therapy. But still, why are you going to the doctor? Unless you want to hear from his authorized knowledge. So, an essential part of advancement in bhakti is to recognize that Krishna knows best. I remember as a young boy, maybe this always Vladimir Maharaj also remembers, there was a very popular TV show in the USA back in the days when there were family values called Father Knows Best. So the whole point of the TV show was, you know, that in every case, no matter what happens, the father knew what was best for the children. Of course, they don't have such TV show about him. They look, where is father? Who is he anyway? So, my mother would always make sure that I watched that TV program. She would always supervise the TV programs that we watched. We couldn't watch anything that was not progressive in terms of social values. And so you watch this one. So, Krishna knows best, and we as his children, Sarvayoni Shikantaya, Krishna is the sea-giving father of all living entities, and we as his children need to understand that Krishna knows best. But because we're attached to material fulfillment, we want to impose upon Krishna, do it this way, take me back to Godhead this way. It's like a little child ordering his parents, pay for the mortgage in this way. Can you imagine? This little girl, how old are you? Nine. You can imagine her telling her mother and father, pay for the mortgage in this way, arrange this floating rate, arrange that in this way. The parents are like, whoa. Just sit down, have your prasad. It's a piece of burpee, quiet. So we are like that with Krishna. Do it this way. I'm ready to go back to God, and I'm ready to be Krishna conscious. Just do it like this. I know best. I know what's best for me. And if you do things my way, I can assure you I'll be enthusiastic in devotional service. But if you do things your way, oh, it's a little scary. In so much of India, there's this fear of Krishna. Better worship the demigods. They are there for material benefit. Krishna, you don't know. You don't know what he could be up to. Krishna's too spiritual. But the demigods, they're specifically there. There's no doubt what their portfolio is. So, Hari. Vidya Singh made Shanair Hari. Narayana describes that within his heart appeared Shanair without delay, Hari, the personality of God. Hari means, yes, he who takes away all impediments to pure love, but also the second part of the meaning of Hari is also important. He rewards us with ecstatic love once he removes the impediments. Now, just with an open mind, if someone says to you, I will take away all impediments so that you can have ecstatic exchanges of love. Oh, this is very nice. People go to psychologists and pay $150 an hour for that. But when Lord Hari says, I will take away all impediments to ecstatic love, well, wait a minute now. It could wind up like Narada Muni losing his mother and father. What about the six sons of Devaki who were murdered by Kamsa? We just go down the whole list and we become paranoid. You see, this material world is what it is, and we have to accept that. It's as Krishna has described. Dukkhalayam asasvatam. It's temporary, it's miserable. Anicjam asukham lokam. Krishna explains frankly and honestly, but we don't want to accept that. Oh, Krishna, you're just exaggerating a bit for our benefit. We know it's for our benefit. Still a bit of exaggeration there. Just to motivate us, you know, motivational speaking. If we take Bhagavad Gita straight as it is, we'll understand what this world is. It's not meant for our fulfillment. It's not meant for our enjoyment. Although we try so hard, we struggle so hard, we dream, we hallucinate, we practically kill ourselves trying for something that doesn't exist. Then, when the material nature shows its face, its real face periodically, we become stunned. How could this happen to me? How could this happen to me? Should it not happen? What kind of world is this? Once we make our peace with the reality of material existence, then we stop blaming Krishna and we stop being afraid of Krishna. Making peace with material existence of accepting its reality means understanding it's not meant for our enjoyment. So gradually, sooner or later, quickly, one has to come to this realization, and the bhakti process is meant to induce that understanding in you by giving you the superior taste of serving Krishna in devotion. Then your grip, that ferocious grip that we have on material nature, starts to slacken. It's like a little child. All the child has are some toys. And if you try to take the child's toys away, the child becomes so disturbed. These toys are so important. We are like that. What I'm doing is so important. My arrangements are so important. I like to tell a story. I was in Ukraine in September. Oh, Mr. Palana Maharaj is also there for the wonderful festival. And so some devotees, they told me that our little boy, our four-year-old boy, he wants to give you a present. You know, he's very devoted to you, and he wants to give you a present. Something that's most dear to him. So I said, what's that? He said, his favorite toy truck. So the four-year-old, they brought the little boy in. You know, obviously the parents are very proud. He's going to be a future Prahlad Maharaj, and we hope so. And he's showing acts of devotion to the visiting sannyasis. So I was a little uneasy about it, but you know, in Ukraine, you're very enthusiastic. So I, what can I say? Besides, I didn't speak the language. The little boy approaches me, you know, with the toy truck. His precious possession, and he gets a meter away from me, and then he starts looking at the truck, looking at me, looking at the truck, looking at me. The parents say, come on, come on, come on, Dimitri, come on. Give him the truck. And then finally, I can see he's thinking, wait a minute. This is my favorite truck. What's he going to do with it? He doesn't know the nectar, the amrita of playing with trucks. And besides, it's mine. This is my emotional fulfillment. So he just kept looking at me, looking at the truck, and finally he just, wah! Burst out crying. And the parents had to get him, excuse me, Maharaj, and take him out of the room. All right, I thought that was the end of it. I came back through that city. I came back through Kyiv about 3 weeks later. And the parents, they said, we want to have another go at this scene. We have prepared him. He is ready. He has consciously made a decision. And to help him make that, to offer that gift, we have let him keep his favorite truck, and we went out and bought a new toy truck for him to present to you. Again, I thought this is a bit, but you know, it's the nature of the living entities in that part of the world. These kind of exchanges of showing heartfelt affection. So I said, okay. So they thought everything was covered because he's got a new truck. It's not his favorite truck. So again, they bring the boy into the room, the four-year-old boy, and the new truck is in a box, you know, and you can, what does it have, those kind of plastic windows you can see through and see the product, the consumer product. So he was walking towards me with the box with the new truck in it. And then once again, he starts looking through the window of the box. Ooh, this truck looks good. It's not my favorite yet, but it certainly could be my favorite. He starts looking at me, looking through the window of the box at the new toy truck, looking at me. I can see he's becoming attached. And then again, the parents were disappointed. I reassured them, don't worry, don't worry. He's a good boy. You're good parents. So, we are like that in terms of our spiritual life. We approach Krishna very gingerly, very cautiously, and then we start thinking, wait a minute, How is Krishna going to handle my material attachments? Is he going to do to me like he did to Narada Muni? Of course, Narada Muni took that situation as a boon for his spiritual life. And Prabhupada describes in a very important purport that an actual Krishna conscious person takes every step of the journey back to Godhead as being beneficial for his spiritual life, no matter what destiny throws at the devotee, or more personally, you say Krishna, the devotee, even though the circumstances, to the material point of view, seem very awkward, the devotee accepts it as a means for making further spiritual advancement. So Narada Muni did that. You see his development now, at this point of his existence. Yesterday, or the past few days in Adelaide, we were discussing in Bhagavatam class about Maharaj Anga. He was such a wonderful devotee king. And therefore, his life presented a paradox. How could such a king endowed with all devotional qualities have such a son like Vena, who would slaughter animals? As a little boy, he would slaughter animals just mercilessly. He would even, if he got angry at his playmates as a little boy, he would slaughter them. And the father tried his best to discipline the son, but nothing would work. So the question is, how did that happen? Sometimes we see our bhakti grihasthas, the husband or the wife, is a very wonderful devotee, but sometimes their partner just turns out to be a disaster and causes them so much pain. Or sometimes they're both remaining very nice devotees, and then a very bad child is appears in their family. And so you could really be set back by this. And certainly you could start developing a grudge against the bhakti process, a grudge against Krishna. How could Krishna let this happen to me? We need the Bhagavatam to clarify our situation. So with Maharaj Anga, it was a divine arrangement that he would have a wife from not a good family, even though all care was taken in astrological arrangements, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, sometimes there are mistakes. And so Anga had a wife from a very difficult family line. Her grandfather was death personified. So in any case, it was time for a yajna. And the yajna was performed, but no demigods would appear. So this is a great puzzle, because this was back during the yugas when demigods would always come to yajnas. They'd become visible in order to get their share of the yajna. So none of them came. And Maharaj Anga asked for permission of the head priest. Can I break my vow of silence and inquire? And the first thing he said was, have I done some kind of offense that the devas have not appeared? And the priests consulted with one another and they gave their verdict. You are faultless. You are so faultless that even in your mind there is no sin. But in your past life, some sinful activity was performed and has resulted in your not having a son. But, they said, if we do a particular ritual, you'll be able to have a son. And then the yajna can be successful, because according to the strict Vedic procedures of yajnas at that time, you need a son to make your whole situation suitable. So, this happened, and indeed, the wife was able to have a son. But what kind of son was it? The son was so atrocious, did so many horrible things, that finally, what did Unga conclude? He said, how wonderful it is, the families who don't have any sons. What a favorable position they're in. Just see all the damage that my son is causing, my little boy is causing. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that you have to understand there was public shame for the king to have such a son. And he was in complete anxiety due to his inability to straighten out the son. Now you might say, why? Why did such a caliber of devotee have such a son? But we need the guidance of the Bhaktivedantas in order to see into this situation. And Srila Prabhupada mercifully allows us to have that proper vision. He says that this was an arrangement by the Lord to bring Unga back to him quicker, to finish off his material attachments and bring him closer to him, so that and in the process of that, Unga would drop his family life and drop his kingdom, go into the forest, and prepare for going back to Godhead. So it was actually a favor. And furthermore, although Vaina was such an atrocious son, and he became such an atrocious king, that the brahmanas had to do the rare act of killing him with mantras to save the people, still, from the dead body of Vaina, the sages were able to create a conduit for the Shaktivesh avatar, the empowered incarnation of the Lord, Maharaj Kritu, to appear. So even from a situation that looks so inauspicious, from a body that looks, that is completely inauspicious, the sages established a conduit. It's not that they created life, but they created a mechanism or a means, an avenue for such an empowered devotee of the Lord to appear. So how do you judge? How do we know the overall picture? How do we know what is good luck, so-called, what is bad luck, so-called? How do we know? Unless we have transcendental vision, we will be bewildered. It's like Prabhupada said about himself. He said, according to his astrology, he was meant to be one of the richest men to have ever lived in India. And indeed, he described in his own words that from the time he met his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he accepted that order to go spread Krishna consciousness in the Western countries. So Srila Prabhupada, he described his plan was to become very wealthy, and in that way, people would listen because people respect wealth. And he thought, India is known back then anyway as a poor country. Who will take me seriously? But if I become very rich, then I will be able to effectively carry out the order of my Guru Maharaj. So that was his plan. But he said, in his own words, Krishna and I had an argument. There was no question of my not carrying out the order of my Guru Maharaj, but I wanted to do it as a rich man, and Krishna said, do it as a poor man. Penniless. So we had an argument, and Krishna won. These are the topmost dealings of the Lord and his devotees. Such affection and intimacy. We should not misunderstand. And then in our neophyte stage, say, oh, I'm having an argument with Krishna Guru. Forget it. As this purport describes, there are preliminary stages before you attain unalloyed love for God. There's a ladder that you climb. So, what seemed to be a tragedy with Unga was actually the affection of the Lord. We also talked about Vritrasura, but we won't go into that one today, maybe in the future, because that shows also a bizarre, apparently bizarre circumstance in which material inauspiciousness and misfortune actually becomes the tool for the greatest fortune. This is the life of a devotee. It's very exciting, but you can't understand it with material vision. We're hearing about Narada Muni's manifestation of ecstatic love for Krishna. As soon as I began to meditate upon the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead, with my mind transformed in transcendental love, just think, that same mind that gives us so much trouble, it can be the means for such pure ecstasy. Instead of a mind agitated by material influence, his mind is transformed in transcendental love. Bhava Nirjita. Mind transformed in transcendental love for the Lord. This is the perfection of what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that the mind can be your greatest enemy, but it also can be your best friend. And Prabhupada explains in the purport how the properly trained mind can act wonderfully as a device for taking you back to God. This is what we all want. And Narada Muni is showing the end result, generally speaking, that his mind is transformed in transcendental love, Bhava Nirjita, tears are rolling down his eyes, and without delay, the personality of God, Sri Krishna, appeared on the lotus of my heart. This is for real. This is the ripe mango. We have heard how the whole bhakti process is like a mango. Some stages, the mango is unripe, and in other stages, the mango is ripe. Still, whether unripe or ripe, it's a mango. And we should derive great confidence in that. A mango is a mango. It's just a matter of time before the unripe mango becomes ripe. Leave it on the windowsill, deal with the unripe mango properly, it becomes ripe. Similarly, if we remain situated in devotional service under the guidance of the parampara, in time we'll become ripe. Of course, if we do something that injures ourselves, what can be done? If a patient in the hospital who's been following the doctor's instructions then suddenly does something wild, it's not the hospital's fault. What can be done? The patients have their independence. And the hope is that such rebellious patients, they will correct themselves. They'll see that the doctor knows best, relatively speaking. So this is the nature of material existence, that it's a hospital, it's meant to cure us, but sometimes even those who are fortunate to come to the hospital and spend time in the hospital and they actually start getting well because they have misused their independence, they do something wild. I know I had one elderly relative and he was in the hospital in his last years and it was a nursing home in his last years, and you would think he would start preparing for the next life and be very sober and be very philosophical. No, he was in his early 80s and still he was trying to chat up the nurses. He's calling up my other relatives. Get my credit card. I want a brand new BMW. Just carry on like that. What can you do? and then they have this phenomenon. I'm sure it doesn't happen in Australia, but it happens in the USA. They have these persons, they have these ladies who go to nursing homes looking for elderly men who are, you know, in their last years, and they're very desperate. And they just, play with the man, just give him a few squeezes and a few hugs, and the man becomes very giddy, and then the man hands over his inheritance, and yes, this happens. I'm sure not in Australia. So, this happened to my relative, one of those ladies, she's in her 40s, not young enough to attract any young man, but she saw that there's a lucrative occupation, so she was making the rounds of the nursing homes, and she she started playing with this relative of mine, and you know, and of course the man's like 81, you know, I mean physically, but still, just a mental idea. And she would just, you know, pinch him, and you know, he can all giddy, and then she'd make up a story. I can't pay my rent next month. Can you help? And arouse a man's compassion, give him a few more smiles. And so this lady was famous throughout the nursing home circuit in this particular part of the USA. Well, my brother is a doctor, and he found out about it. And he immediately found out about this lady's reputation. So he had to personally go to the nursing home and straighten out this relative. You know, hey, you're, forget it. You're 81 years old. Stop chatting up the nurses and stop, you know, trying to facilitate this lady who's going to exploit you and take all your money. So you might say, but it's a nursing home. How can these things go on? But everyone has their independence. So the staff of the nursing home, combined with my brother who's a doctor, they tried to fix the situation. But you can't blame the nursing home that people have their independence, even though they're actually in the nursing home getting medical care. So that is the non-utopian version of material existence. Prabhupada explained, we're not utopians. We recognize reality for what it is and the dangers. So, Narada Muni is so established in his development of love for the Lord that his sensory activities are saturated with the bhakti experience at its top levels. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes what was going on with Narada Muni. You see, in the purport, Prabhupada describes that it was quite possible for him to perceive the actual presence of the Lord, which he tangibly experienced by his developed spiritual senses without material tinge. What are the details to that? This is first canto, so perhaps Srila Prabhupada chose not to go into details in the first canto. So Vishwanath explains the details about the spiritual senses of Narada Muni. First of all, with his spiritual sense of smell, he could smell the fragrance of the Lord's body. And with his ears, with his spiritual ears, he could hear the ankle bells of the Lord. And with his spiritual sense of seeing, he saw the beautiful face of the Lord. So this is all factual. It is not imagination. But there is a progressive development of bhakti. And we should know about the different levels so that we can see that indeed there is hope. We shouldn't feel that, oh, this is impossible. Krishna's given us an impossible to follow bhakti process, even though it is so sweet. No. Everything depends very much on good association. And that good association transforms your initial liking for Krishna, liking for bhakti, which we all had in the beginning. But you have to make further progress. So in good association, you develop an attachment for following the rules and regulations of bhakti, because you see them not as your enemy, but you see them as a way to rid yourself of all troubles. As Prabhupada writes here about the prescribed rules and regulations of devotional service, this will dissipate all sorts of misgivings and remove all personal deficiencies that hamper progress in devotional service. So in good association, you develop an attachment for the bhakti process. And gradually, that attachment for the bhakti process turns into attachment for Krishna himself. Lord Kabir Dev says, Shradharatya Bhakti Anukramishati. That first is that firm conviction, and then Rati, attraction, love for Krishna, and then Bhakti, that full development of transcendental exchanges with the Lord. You can look at bhakti in two ways. It is both the means and the end. So Shraddhartya Bhakti Anukramishati. First the firm conviction, then the attraction, then the love. That means, if you look at it in that sequence, strictly speaking, it means bhakti in its full-blown, full development as loving reciprocation with the Lord. Or you can understand that bhakti can also mean the means for developing rati, attraction. This explanation of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. You can take that verse, that last line, chronologically or not chronologically. Either way, it works. So bhakti is both the means and the end, and therefore we want the association of devotees who inspire us in devotional service as we follow the prescribed rules and regulations. And this will deal with all our personal problems and remove all personal deficiencies. And we actually start to trust Krishna. How can there be love if there's no trust? That's the big question. In any kind of relationship, trust has to be there for love. In Goloka Vrindavan, you see everyone just trusts Krishna. They don't know he's God, but they just trust him. Except with their milk products. So, by hearing Bhagavatam, we drop our perpetual mistrust of Krishna, our caution, and at the topmost level of bhakti, like the gopis in Vrindavan, when Krishna plays his flute, they just drop everything without consideration and race to be with Krishna. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, there's no greater way to love Krishna than as demonstrated by the cowherd damsel of Vrindavan, Ramya Kachchadupasana, Rajabadu Bhargini. All right, we'll stop here and ask if there are any questions. Yes.
He said
astrologers had said that.
If you want to.
Huh?
Before God now, there would not be many Indians. Before God now, there would be as rich as Chakrabha.
You mean spiritually? Well, in that case, he was talking about material wealth. If you want to know more about astrology and its application in both material and devotional lives, you have his holiness Prabhupada Swami here. He can explain to you the ins and outs. Other questions? Yes. Sometimes what's that?
He sent all these devotees, like Malakini lost his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Prabhupada has so wondrously assisted us with his purports. They make everything so clear. He said that his books are like a pharmacy. You call it chemistry or a pharmacy? So he said they have, just like a pharmacy has all kinds of medicines for all types of patients. Similarly, his books have what is needed for all levels of devotees, from the most neophyte level to the Mahabhagavata. All there. And as you serve, you'll see more and more in the Bhaktivedanta purports that you never saw before. So the information is there, and then also you have the society of devotees, and they can help us through the inevitable experiences that come because we're in the material world, even though we're spirit soul. Just like Arjuna, Krishna chastised him, why are you hesitating to fight. You're so attached to your body. We're not the body. You're speaking big words, but you're foolish. So then you might say that Arjuna could point out, Krishna, theoretically I understood what you said, and theoretically I know we're not the body. But when I'm in such a situation that I see my friends and relatives and former teachers on the other side of the battle ready to fight, I just become immobilized. And he dropped his bow, Govinda, I shall not fight. So, in explaining that angle, Srila Prabhupada said, all right, so even if Arjuna protests that theoretically I know, but the reality of this situation is so dramatic and so pressing, still, tam statikshasvabharata, you just tolerate. Now, how do you tolerate? That's why we need devotees, support of devotees, devotee care, to help us tolerate when our knowledge is threatened, our transcendental knowledge is threatened, to help us tolerate the inevitable happenings of material existence. So we need devotee support and devotee care. The information is there in the books, but yes, I agree with you. Sometimes we get so shaken up that you can hardly read. Why me? Why me? I know that's a philosophy, but why me? Krishna, why did you do this? Things happen. In our international society, Krishna consciousness, there are setbacks. There are disappointments. We think, what did Srila Prabhupada, how did he tolerate all this? So yes, the support of sincere devotees is very necessary. Yes?
What is the process of developing trust? Sometimes I've heard that in order for you to trust others, you must be trustworthy yourself. So, but it seems sometimes we're not even trustworthy ourselves, so then how do we get the mercy of becoming to trust others?
You know what I do in order to learn how to trust? I'll confess, even though I'm a sannyasi, I study little kids who have good parents. I watch little kids like him. He automatically trusts his father. He's not, until he becomes a teenager. He's no question. He knows he's going to eat. He's going to have prasad. He's going to have a bed to sleep in. His father will be there for him, you know, to get him toys and give him a hug. And to cheer with him during the cricket match when India plays Australia. He knows the father will be there. So, let's be practical. You study what's around you. I study the little children and see how they just depend on their parents without hesitation, without any complication. And I think that's how I should be with Krishna. So you use what's around you to take motivation. So you can do that. You know your brahmachari. You watch the little... When children have good parents, they're so relaxed and peaceful and happy, spontaneously happy. Of course, it is the nature of Kali Yuga that in the Western world, certainly good parents have disappeared. For example, in the USA, the statistics are that more than half of all children now do not stay in homes where their original parents are there. More than half. I don't know what the statistics are for Australia. I'm sure it is not any better. I during our retreats, I give the example. I was at one very well-to-do Indian man's house in Canberra, and he had an 8-year-old daughter, and he told me how one day his daughter came home from school and said, Mommy, Daddy, when are you going to live in separate houses like everyone else in my class? Everyone in my class, you know, they can spend one weekend at mommy's house, the next weekend at daddy's house. It sounds like so much fun. When are you going to do that? Why are you and mommy still together? Oh, everyone in my class is like that. This is the situation. So then, how can there be trust? But if you look at children with very loving, caring parents who are sacrificing everything for the child's welfare, you see that natural trust of the child. Anything else? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.